When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, my name is Peter Zablocki, and I'm a historian, author, and college professor. I'm thrilled to invite you to check out Evergreen Network's History Shorts podcast. Every Tuesday and Thursday, join me on a journey through time, exploring the little-known and hidden gems of history. In each bite-sized episode, I'll dive into my original research to bring you intriguing historical curiosities you've probably never heard of, uncovering the fascinating stories that have shaped our world. From forgotten figures to overlooked events. Subscribe now and never miss an episode of the History Shorts podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. This is Peter.
And this is Tom.
And you're listening to History Teachers Talking Podcast,
part of the Evergreen Podcast Network.
All right, this is Peter Zablocki and Thomas Reska, and welcome back to our podcast. Tom, I feel like if we go back and listen to every one of our episodes for the past 4 years and count the amount of times we said, oh yeah, we should do Jimmy Carter, it would probably be a lot.
Yeah, we've talked about him quite a bit and here, there, and always saying that he deserved his own episode. So we finally said, let's just do it. So we're going to be talking about the 39th President of the United States from 77 to 81. And man, the peanut farmer, right? Jimmy Carter, who also won the Peace Prize in 2002. He really became well-liked, I would say. We'll get into this more like after his presidency than yes. During his presidency. A lot of people weren't really crazy about him necessarily. He was seen, I guess, weak, but I think history was very kind to him in retrospect. And he's still, as the time of this podcast, anyway, in 99. April, he is 99 years old. He is still alive. Yeah, so...
Longest, yeah. Did you see that? He's the longest living former president or president ever in the history of the United States.
He's also the longest married couple of all time.
I know. Well, she passed away last year, didn't she?
Yeah, but they were married for 77 years.
Wow. I mean, they were crazy. Even when you listen to that love story, like, and I think we did this presidential couple summer, go back in our podcast. I feel like so many people are probably sitting on Jimmy Carter specials because this is terrible to say, but think about it, Tom, right? I assume everyone's just ready for that moment when, like, you know,
oh, yeah, they have that like reel, all the news channels have that reel, just ready to go. Like, Good Morning America to go. Has it just like with the little, like, you know, Eyes of an Angel song going to get ready to play in the background.
100%.
Just ready to do that, you know. Something with Jimmy Carter have like a floating peanut going on in the background or whatever. But he was a peanut farmer, but he was also, wasn't he also a nuclear scientist?
He was. Yeah, he was in the Navy.
We're getting ahead of ourselves here. We'll do a little retrospective, but he was a very interesting individual.
I just heard Trump, I think this past week, said that, I can't quote directly, but it was something along the lines of Joe Biden is even worse than Jimmy Carter was as president. I'll take Jimmy Carter right now.
Yeah, you said it right before. Yeah. He would be an interesting one to vote for nowadays if someone like this was running. But I think it got away from him a little bit, and the country wasn't in great shape really before Carter. You know, like it was a little bit of craziness. You had you know, everything with Watergate.
Stagflation.
You had a lot of other stuff going on with Nixon and then Ford. So like Carter takes control, and he will talk about it, but he does some things that
controversial.
People, when he tells Americans that, you know, put down
suck it up.
A thermostat and put on a sweater, like Americans are not going to respond well to that. So it's things like that. And then the Iran hostage crisis is what did him in politically.
So let's talk a little bit about Jimmy Carter's background and then kind of see how he made it into the White House before we assess his presidency in the White House. And then we'll probably spend a decent amount of time talking about what happened afterwards because of the fact that that's where he really shines.
Becomes a big shot.
Right. So we know for a fact he was president of the United States from 1977 to 1981. He was a one-term president, born and raised in Plains, Georgia, graduated from U.S. Naval Academy in 1946. Shortly thereafter, he joined the U.S. Naval Submarine Service. But he's more known for his family's peanut-growing business, right? Like, that's kind of his thing, right? His father is a descendant of, like, original American colony of Virginia immigrant, I guess.
Yeah, you can date that up back. Yeah, he would... he would do really well with that, like the, what is that?
Yeah, genealogy.
23andMe and all that stuff, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, like, I mean, old generations of Carters go back. They were all cotton farmers in Georgia, stemming back to, like, 1600. His father kind of gets away from the cotton business, and he goes into the peanut business and also runs a general store.
Successfully.
Very successfully, yeah. Right? Carter has... I think there's three siblings, and I just saw this before we click record. I was telling you, all three of his siblings died from pancreatic cancer. I mean, in adult life, but still, like, that's kind of like, whoa, pretty intense. They said that his mom was a nurse, which also is important in this case because she was a nurse. He became, I think, the first president to be born in a hospital. To have been born in a hospital.
The first one. Yeah, first one actually born in a hospital, not just on like a farm or. When the Great Depression hits, right, it hit the South really hard. They managed to prosper during those times. So by the 1930s, his father's business was booming. They had over 200 employees working on his farm. Carter became the first person from his family side to graduate from high school, goes to Georgia Southwestern Junior College before he joins the Naval ROTC program, when he goes to Georgia Institute of Technology to continue his engineering scholarship. So he was doing really good in school and everything like that. He was doing very well. But he said he didn't fit in well, particularly in the Navy, with some Navy Academy in Annapolis, because he was only 5'9". And it's also during this time that he also reconnects with a woman named Rosalie Smith. But I guess they knew in childhood, and they reconnect.
That was his sister's, like, friend.
Yeah. So they marry in 1946, or right after the Second World War. And this is when he goes back to being – he worked on submarines, and then he goes back to being a peanut farmer after his dad gives him land, in the 50s.
But from my understanding, Rosalind didn't like the fact, because they lived as military people, as naval.
She wasn't crazy with that, yeah.
Exactly. They were stationed in Hawaii, then eventually got moved to Connecticut, I think they wind up in California. And when his father's like, no, come back, you know, you could start the peanut business or continue the peanut business. Rosalind was like not necessarily happy about it. She was living a life of an officer, a naval officer, and she was very much fine with that.
Well, the father passed away in 1953 from pancreatic cancer. And then kind of like the family farm and the business kind of fell into some disarray that wasn't really doing as well anymore. So Rosaline was against it. But he moved back to kind of like resuscitate the farm. And that's when he started coming back, is when he became active in community politics first, right? So he won like a seat in the Sumner County Board of Education. So he starts on the Board of Ed in 1955, becomes its chairman. He just kind of just continues to work his way up really throughout Georgia as a politician at this point.
And he just grown up too. He was very much pro-civil rights, very religious.
He runs for the Georgia State Senate in 1962 against someone named Homer Moore. Initially, he said he lost the election, but the initial vote showed that it was blatantly obvious the victory was a result of like fraud. So like one precinct had 420 ballots cast, and even though there were only 333 issued, so that didn't make any sense. So Carter appealed the outcome, and a Georgia judge actually discarded the 400 vote and declared Carter the winner. So he was a two-term senator from that point. And the one thing that Carter's doing, even though he was from like the rural South, is he was very much, we talked about this before, Pete, very much in for civil rights. So he's a big supporter of civil rights. And then that really is what helped him. So he decides to run for governor in 1966.
I don't think he wins. Georgia. Yeah, he wins the Georgia governorship in 71, and governor from 71 to 75, right?
Yeah, he runs for the first, he finished a distant third in 66. That gets him on the ballot, gets him out there, his name out there.
Yeah, so then eventually he becomes the governor from 71 to 75. This is what really kind of brings him national attention, and more or less because he's able to do complete budget overhaul in Georgia, which actually... Again, this is a time when America has a lot of energy crisis issues, which we'll get into in a second. But so that kind of brings attention to it, that he's able to kind of get his economy in order in Georgia. But also a lot of racial desegregation is going on.
He was big time for he really wanted to get rid of segregation. He increased the number of African-American officials in state government. He promoted education reform and prison reform. So he kind of got elected by kind of toning down his liberalism.
Like he I saw he was, that. People thought they were like betrayed because he became governor.
Because he was like, a lot of them thought, they thought that, particularly when I say a lot, it's like the white royal voters thought he was too liberal in 1966. So he kind of like pulled back a lot of that in the 1970s, and that's what got him elected. And then as soon as he gets elected, he returned to his progressive values that he did earlier in his career. So he kind of, it's a really good example of like, you appeal to the voters to get the votes, but once you're in power, now you're in power, do what you truly wanted to do. That's one reason why some people weren't crazy about him, but other people liked him. And he didn't like the idea of niches and political decorum. Like he kind of did his own thing.
Yep.
When he was there, but it worked. Like he did do a lot of things, particularly in the energy crisis.
Yeah, and in many ways, it was like a microcosm of the nation in a sense, because, like I said, economically, socially, this guy is definitely like an outsider, even within his own state. In a sense, as you mentioned, he comes in and he goes, all right, the time of racial discrimination is over. And people are like, whoa, wait, hold on a second. Like, we didn't think we voted for that. But he does, as I kind of briefly mentioned before, he does merge about 300 different state agencies into 22. So basically saves the state tons of money. And that's what a lot of people point to later, like when he's being touted for maybe going becoming president. They're like, oh, all right, like this guy knows how to tighten the budget in a sense. He's governor till 75, and 76 he runs for president, right?
Yeah, so that he's basically seeing that the liberal George McGovern got pounded by Richard Nixon in 72. So Carter's looking at that. So he decided, listen, in 76, the Democrats are going to need like a new type of figure, a centralist figure to regain their presidency. And 76, when the Watergate scandal happens, right? Go back in our archive, listen to that one. Anyway, basically, he said like America's, you know, idea of Washington politics is pretty much shattered at this point. Believed that the next president would have to be like a political outsider, one that's not really known for being in the system. And he felt that he could fill that role. So he was actually one of 10 candidates for the Democratic presidential election in 76. And he was probably the least well known because people were so frustrated with established politicians that it kind of proved to be an advantage for him. So he campaigned really as that, saying, listen, you vote for me, I'm going to balance the budget, which he did in Georgia. I'm going to reduce government waste, which he did in Georgia. And I'm going to increase government assistance to the poor. All things that he kind of already did, he had experience in. Now, there's one thing that Carter always does well, and it's kind of like a lesson, like find what you're good at and stick with it.
Yeah.
And that's really what he did. So he had a lot of these centerpieces, a lot of these like slogans. And one of them was like, I'll never tell a lie. I'll never avoid a controversial issue. And his slogan was a leader for a change. So you get like, you get it. It's like, he's a leader for a change, but also he's a leader that's going to come in and do change. And they hit home, especially during right after the Watergate scandal. And when he decides that he secures a Democratic nomination, and he challenges Gerald Ford, who obviously was Nixon's vice president, who became president. And I think Ford was kind of sealed when he pardoned Nixon.
Like, well, yeah, I think that's...
When that happened, there was really no chance he was going to do anything.
But Carter's also, his entire campaign was, strategy was kind of out of this world. So he basically thought to himself, all right, let's reach every possible region in the United States that I can, where another candidate has not yet extended their influence. So it's like getting to different regions before his, you know, opponents get to those regions. So he traveled 50,000 miles, visited 37 states, right, and delivered over 200 speeches before any other candidate even entered the race. So he was like, I'm running for president. My name is Jimmy Carter. And then boom, 50,000 miles, 37 states, 200 speeches. And then everybody else is still like, wait, we're running for president. Like, are we doing this?
Yeah, he got like a head start, without a doubt.
100%.
Well, I said he even had he had a big lead when he wins the nomination over Ford, a double digit lead. So he knows how to do politics, but he also doesn't know how to do politics, if that makes sense. He did a lot of things that narrowed the polls quite a bit because the race was a lot closer than people really thought it was going to be because, like you said, Ford had no chance, plus Ford wasn't really exciting. You had Chevy Chase making fun of Ford on SNL, like Saturday Night Live, like falling down all the time because Ford did fall down quite a bit.
Poor Ford.
Yeah, but the one thing that Carter did that kind of hurt him in the polls was he did an interview with Playboy.
Oh, you saw that, right? Yeah.
So he admits to committing adultery in his heart. So not actually adultery, but I guess
looking at women,
thinking about like
them.
I think he thought he was just being, basically he said, I'm being honest, and his religious background and stuff like that. He made some other remarks about sex and infidelity. And they said that really alienated a lot of voters. They're kind of looking at this and be like, listen, I don't really know if I like this guy anymore, especially if he's, you know, coming from that Bible Belt and stuff like that. And he's talking about these sorts of things. So like we said, it was a lot closer than it was expected, but he did win. and he becomes the 39th president of the United States.
Yeah, he won with 50.1% of the popular vote to Ford's 48%. If even electoral votes, he won with 297 electoral votes. Ford had 240. But the Playboy thing really got people thinking, like, whoa, like, because at one point he even said, like, I don't mind if people utter the F word. And it, to me today, this is 1976. Like, we think of politics today and what politicians say and what former presidents say.
What he said then was nothing, but
nothing. Yeah. And people were like, critics were like, whoa, this is the boundary between.
You got to remember, too, like we were saying private. Before, like what we were saying before, this is right after Watergate, too. So there's already like a big distrust and stuff like that. That can't be downplayed enough. But this is right after Watergate. They're looking for a change. And this guy, oh, maybe this guy's going to be better. And then he's talking like this. And that's going to turn a lot of people off. Not now. Not in 2024, obviously, when you're looking at some of the people that are running for president. Not getting political, one way or the other.
Yeah.
But, you could not get away with some of the saying like that. It's going to hurt you in the polls. And it did.
Yeah, it did. So let's let's talk about his presidency, because again, he wasn't really there that long. He alienates a lot of people. First of all, he pisses off Congress right away.
Yeah, well, he had really high approval ratings at first.
Yeah,
because he had the new leadership. Yeah, but he does anger people right away. Yeah,
yeah, and they said that Congress, he just never got along with congressmen. He was kind of like, well, I don't play the political game. And everyone's like, dude, you are the president of the United States.
That's what you do.
You have to play the political game. And he was like, I don't do that. People are asking him for favors. He's like, I don't do favors. And everyone's like, whoa, like this guy's a little too honest for his own good. And he alienates a lot of congressmen, even congressmen that are Democrat. Like he doesn't want to work with them. He's very like much like a lone wolf in that sense.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of the new Medal of Honor podcast from Evergreen Podcasts, brought to you in partnership with the National Medal of Honor Museum. In each 3-minute episode, we'll learn about a different service member who distinguished him or herself through an act of valor. We'll include stories from the Civil War to Iraq and Afghanistan, and from all branches of the military. We'll talk about service members who were overlooked for the medal at first due to their race or religion, and about those who were celebrated at the time. We'll hear stories of soldiers like Audie Murphy, future Hollywood star who mounted a burning tank to hold off German infantry in World War II. And people like Dr. Mary Edwards Walker, a Civil War Army doctor and the only woman to receive the Medal of Honor so far. Learn about these heroes and more wherever you get your podcasts.
And, you know, he's got a lot of things to deal with. Obviously, he's got the U.S. energy crisis. That's the biggest domestic issue we have.
Yeah, well, that is because of the 73 oil embargo. So Carter did believe, listen, we have to cure our independence on foreign oil. And he actually does do it. He decreases foreign oil consumption by, I think, over 8%. He develops huge energy stores of oil and natural gas. But then what happens is as things are getting better, yeah, the Iranian Revolution of 1979, and that drives up the oil prices. Again, that led to those long lines at gas stations and stuff like that. And that kind of overshadowed any achievements he was able to do, because that's what people
see and remember.
Yeah.
In 1979, inflation soared from 7.6% to 11.3%.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Right. It was pretty nuts. By 1980, when he was his last year as president, the inflation climbed up to 14%, the highest since 1947. So standard of living in the United States slips right from first place to fifth place in the world. And along with it, Carter's popularity kind of slips, you know. He actually proposed like 100 different energy conservation and development proposals, you might say. And a lot of representatives from the oil and gas producing states were very much against it. Specifically, car manufacturers were very much against it. They lobbied against his gas rationing provisions because he was like, let's drive less. I mean, this is also when you have the 55 miles per hour speed limit. That's when that comes out.
Yeah.
But then he gets past the National Energy Act, which places a tax on gas guzzling cars, and like it removes price controls on oil and natural gas produced in the United States, and then also extended tax credits for the development of alternative energy. A lot of car companies and a lot of oil companies are like, dude, like you're going after us, kind of thing. They did not see that as a good thing.
Well, he was, and he kind of called people out for one of these things. That's what he does in 79. He delivers a speech which is considered one of the worst American speeches of all time.
Where he's wearing a sweater?
No, well, the crisis of confidence speech.
Yes.
Where he kind of is blaming a lot of America's problems because he said, like, you know, the people of America have like a poor spirit. We don't have that like can-do attitude that we used to have, where they're saying, well, that's because of what's going on and how America is seeing the world. But he tries to do a lot of things. He, like, also, he tries to, like, do a lot with human rights, right? He suspends a lot of military aid to a lot of South American countries like Chile and El Salvador, things of that nature. I guess one of his most successful foreign policies is the Camp David Accords, right, between Israel and Egypt.
Yep.
So he leads to a peace treaty where Israel actually leaves the Sinai Peninsula. Two sides recognize each other's government, so that was big.
It's a mixed bag when it comes to foreign policy. But like, just kind of real quick before we move on from domestic policy, Carter, one of the first things he does, he comes in and he pardons all the Vietnam War draft evaders on his second day in office. So that's like a big deal. And then you look at his civil rights. I mean, his administration included more African Americans and women than any other administration before it. In 1977, he also appointed civil rights leader Andrew Young as a U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, who was the first, Young was the first African-American to hold that post. To the judicial branch alone, Carter appointed 28 African-Americans, 29 women, which included six African-Americans, and 14 Latinos. Still, a lot of people wanted more from him, so there's this like, hey, that's not enough. And a lot of critics claimed that he was too preoccupied with battles over energy and the economy to really give civil rights the full attention that they thought he was going to because of his background, that he's always pro-civil rights. But he did do a lot, specifically in comparison to those that came before him. But foreign policy, again, that's kind of a mixed bag because he does give Panama Canal back to Panama.
Which angers a lot of people, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And at the same time, Panama winds up eventually turning around and selling the rights to the Panama Canal anyway. But he felt like, look, it's in Panama. It should belong to the people of Panama. But Camp David Accords are by far his biggest foreign policy because he was really big on promoting human rights, as you mentioned before. That was his whole thing. He looked at the liberties listed in the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights, and he thought about expanding those to the world, right? So cut off military aid to Argentina and Brazil. The countries had good relations with the United States, but they had imprisoned or tortured thousands of their own citizens.
Yeah, so he wouldn't talk to them anymore.
So he's like, yeah, we're not talking to you guys anymore. He established a Bureau of Human Rights in the State Department, undercut allies such as Nicaragua.
Yeah, if you're a dictator, he's like, I don't care if you're pro-United States. If you're a dictator, we're not dealing with you. If you're human rights abusers, we're not dealing with you. But he does open up trade with China. Again.
Yes, and South Korea.
So, like I said, it's kind of
mixed bag.
Mixed bag. So probably the biggest factor in his like decline is was the Iran hostage crisis. So in November 1979, radical Iranian students they seized the U.S. embassy in Tehran and they take 66 Americans hostage. So and Carter does try and negotiate the release of these hostages many times. There's also a badly botched rescue mission right with the helicopters. And it kind of made him look like just a leader that couldn't get things done, that he was outmaneuvered by these group of like students. And the hostages were held for 444 days before finally being released on the day Carter left office in 1981, which is crazy because Carter, if you look back at that, most people kind of think that it was Reagan that got elected. Like that when after Reagan got elected, that's why like the Iranians were scared. So they let him go.
But Carter
was still negotiating. And they actually, the Reagan handlers kind of said, no, wait until Ronald Reagan enters office, then release the hostages. So it kind of looks better PR-wise. Another thing that he does that people get really angry is he boycotts the 1980 Olympics, which people really didn't like. Because of the Soviet, it was in the Soviet Union, I believe, right? So they boycotted the games in Moscow because of the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. So in other nations too, 50 other countries like Canada, West Germany, Japan, they also boycott the Olympics. So the Soviet Union is like, all right, fine. They just win all the gold, basically. And then 4 years later, when the Olympics come to Los Angeles in 84, the Soviet Union refuses to appear. So that's a whole other
thing. This is what a lot of people don't realize as well, because when you start looking at in Ronald Reagan, and everyone's like, oh, you know, arms build up and militarization and America first and all that stuff. Jimmy Carter is the one that ends detente, right? Yeah. When the Soviets invade Afghanistan in 1978, Jimmy Carter's the one's like, that's it, we're done. And he's the one that basically ups military spending, like doubles military spending. He's the one that says, forget this whole detente, we're not friends. And he's the one that starts to militarize the United States, not Reagan. Like, everyone says, oh, Reagan did it. No, no, Jimmy Carter's the one that starts it, which is what people think, that it's just so, like, out of character for him to do that. It's pretty
He was tougher than I think people give him credit for. I think just the fact that he didn't talk about it like that, he didn't know how to, like, speak in that tone and stuff. You know, and then Reagan beats him really because Reagan just asked a question, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? And for a variety of reasons, you can blame someone, Carter, some just on the world, right? Most Americans were not. So that's why Reagan just crushes Carter in the 1980 election. Carter's a one-term president. One-term presidents after that are referred to as Jimmy Carters. Yeah. That's kind of what it's called. Like, he becomes kind of like adjective, right? For that, right? Am I using that right? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
Descriptive. But he does become also probably the greatest, I would say, the greatest ex-president in American history for what he does.
Diplomacy,
all his work he does for Habitat for Humanity, right? Yep. And everything like that, all the healthcare systems that he tries to build up in Africa and Latin America. He oversees 114 elections in like new democracies and stuff like that. So he's trying to really help the world. He creates the Carter Center, which is
just
really,
1982, with his wife Rosalind.
Yeah, this is basically trying to promote human rights and just alleviate suffering across the globe. Like, no one's going to argue that. You know what I mean? Like, what's the goal of this organization? I want to alleviate suffering.
Yeah, humanitarian efforts, eradication of diseases, right?
Yeah, that's a big one. Yeah,
that's a big one. Then besides that, like diplomatic efforts, various diplomatic initiatives, envoy, really, for peace missions around the world sent by presidents. Bill Clinton sent Carter all the time as peace missions. Like, former presidents were like, all right, get me Jimmy Carter. He'll figure this out. And they would literally send him to other countries. He is the guy that is representing the United States when it comes to peace missions. Didn't he join Nelson Mandela in 2007?
Yeah, he does. He does all those things. He actually he started teaching Sunday school again. was the big thing that I saw. So, the guy was staying busy. But, he was in politics. And they was used. And whenever they show, like, the images of the former presidents, I remember I used to show that in my class. And it was, like, Obama, the two Bushes, Clinton, Carter. And the students just didn't know who Carter was.
Oh my God!
You know, like they could have like name these presidents, and they would name all of them pretty quickly. And Carter, a couple of students would eventually get it. I would just go around there, but like some students, he does kind of get forgotten a little bit because of what happened before him in Watergate, right? And what happened after him with Reagan, who's such a bigger personality.
Yeah,
so I think he kind of just gets not a forgotten president because he's still so modern, he's still alive today. But he's definitely one that doesn't get talked about because his presidency is still considered a failure.
Yes.
Whatever you say about him now, his presidency is considered a failure.
Yes. But also, he also has something to say about pretty much every presidency. He got along with Bill Clinton, but not really.
He's a Democrat, so he played nice. But.
Exactly. But apparently, he was not invited at the inauguration ceremony. So since then, he's like, Bill Clinton, you're out. Still helps him out, but he was very much against the Monica Lewinsky scandal because, he's all proper and religious and whatnot. Yeah. He opposed the war in Iraq. So George W. Bush, he was kind of, he actually said George W. Bush's administration has been the worst in history in terms of impact in foreign affairs.
He was not a fan.
Not a fan. He said that even Bush's second term was disappointing. Barack Obama, he actually praised Barack Obama, but then eventually when the issues of drone strikes started coming out, that's when he kind of turned, and that's when the Guantanamo Bay detention camp became an issue. And then federal surveillance programs, all these things, Carter was like, you started off nice and not good enough. And then Donald Trump criticized Trump for basically... Everything.
He doesn't like Trump at all. Obviously, but you look at his politics, he's not going to be a fan.
Yes.
I mean, that's not like shocking. I don't think for anyone that Jimmy Carter is not a fan of Donald Trump.
He did say, though, about Donald Trump that his media coverage is harsher than any other president that he's ever known. Perhaps correct.
Yeah.
Perhaps self-inflicted. I don't know. So, So Jimmy Carter's still kicking. He's written many books.
Yeah, he's in hospice care.
For like months now.
I think the last 7-8 months he's still in hospice. Yeah, like all his family, his grandkids all went to say goodbye. And then they thought it was going to be like 2 or 3 days later. And he is still here. His wife did pass away a few years ago.
Yeah. She passed away 2023, I think.
Was it 2023? Oh, I mean, she was a little bit younger. I'm sorry. She was 96. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's 99. He's chilling. I just think it's crazy. He was born in 1924. I mean, this guy's lived a century. He's lived 100 years.
Yeah, think about what he's seen, absolutely.
Yeah. Who was president in 1924?
Dwight Coolidge?
Well, I was going to say, it was one of those guys, right? It had to be Coolidge. Yeah. Harding, Coolidge, one of those guys. I can't even imagine like what this guy's lived through. All right, do you have any fun facts about Jimmy Carter?
Well, we talked about a couple that he was still doing Sunday school and teaching Sunday school and stuff like that. I think one that also gets, I remember hearing about this and then seeing some of it more was that in, when he was running for election in 1980, he went fishing by his home. And while he was in his boat, a wild rabbit that was being chased by hounds jumped into the water and actually swam towards him. Did you hear about this?
No.
So Carter tries to shoo it away with a paddle. And it was kind of a minor incident, doesn't mean anything. But a photo was taken of it, of Carter like flailing at this bunny, basically. And then it created all these cartoons like, look at this, you know, the president is being chased by a rabbit, by a bunny. And how's he going to stop the Soviet Union? So they kind of, it was like that image kind of also, they said, really hurt him. Again, it was just this rabbit started chasing him. So you're like, hey, get out of here, rabbit. No big deal. But how it looked with him trying to like shoot his rabbit away was like an Elmer Fudd, Bugs Bunny type of moment. And it just also hurt his, politically hurt him quite a bit.
Well, what hurt him in high school, just hit us in 1941. He was the valedictorian. And right before graduation, him and his friends wind up taking like an April Fool's Day. They decide to skip school. So they take like these hot rod cars and they skip school, and he received zeros for that day. He became the salutatorian instead.
Because he was a nuclear engineer, he created the Department of Energy and the Department of Education. Yeah. They both were created under cabinet positions under Jimmy Carter.
He also walked in the inaugural parade. You saw that.
Yeah, right? He was the first to do a lot. And he's still the oldest living president of all time.
And written many, many books. They say that he penned more than 30 books in his life.
Really? That's that many?
That's a lot of books. He won 3 Grammy Awards for in his spoken word album category for audio recordings of his books. I didn't know that he won Grammys. I'm sure we're going to see a lot more when it's time for Carter to part from this earth. But
yes, he had this quote that I think really sums him up a little bit. We have to adjust to changing times and still hold to unchanging principles. I think that's kind of like sums up kind of how he did his politics too. Like he wasn't going to change what he wanted to do, and it cost him in the long run.
All right. I guess it's time to for us to take a trip to the Jimmy Carter Presidential Library.
Why not?
Why not? I don't know where it is, but I assume it's in Georgia.
Yeah, I'm gonna say it's in Georgia.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, guys, for tuning in. We do appreciate it. If you need to find us, you can find us at www.historyteacherstalkingpodcast.com. Make sure you click that like, subscribe button. Continue listening. We do appreciate it. And we'll see you guys in 2 weeks.
Stay safe, everybody.
I hope everyone enjoyed our podcast, and if you would like to email us, you can do so at historyteacherspodcast@gmail.com.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Burn the Boats from Evergreen Podcasts. I interview political leaders and influencers, folks like award-winning journalist Soledad O'Brien and conservative columnist Bill Kristol, about the choices they confront when failure is not an option. I won't agree with everyone I talk to, but I respect anyone who believes in something enough to risk everything for it. Because history belongs to those willing to burn the boats. Episodes are out every other week wherever you get your podcasts.